Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where Dr. Janine Krause, that's me, gives you, a health junkie, a weekly dose of tools to help you increase your energy and resilience to life stressors.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of the Health Fix. On today's episode, I'm interviewing Dr. Erica Ebel Engel. She is the CEO and co-founder of Excella, the internal fitness company. I have been using their test kits for a while now, and I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing and the results my folks are getting. Now, she's got a PhD in biochemistry from Boston University School of Medicine. She's got a BS in chemistry from MIT, so one smart chick here. And she's been featured on TV shows. She had her own show for children, and she's got a very famous TED Talk all about health, and in particular, gut health. So today we're gonna be talking about Excella internal fitness testing and the five main things that it is testing to give you your overall internal fitness score. So it looks at your gut health, it looks at your immune health, it looks at your ability to make energy, how stressed out you are, so your stress management skills, and it's also looking at your cognitive acuity, so what's going on in the brain. And so this total look at all of these is done through 11 metabolites that are found through a simple finger poke on your finger. And you know, I've got to be honest, at first I was like, ooh, only 11 metabolites? You know, how can I get information from there? Well, these 11 metabolites were strategically chosen to be able to help you to guide your direction for your health. Now, Excella internal fitness testing is not just for females. I may be giving that impression a little bit, it's for guys too. And really, this is a great interview where she's kind of diving into the basics of the testing and how she came to discovering the 11 metabolites that they were going to use for the Excella internal fitness testing. So if you want to know how you can get the test that's going to give you all those things, like a big snapshot as to what's going on internally for you, and to give you some direction and which way to go to get your body back in tip-top shape and help you to transform your health, this is the podcast you want to listen to. So let's jump into the podcast. Okay. Hey there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I have Dr. Erica Ebel Engel on. She is the co-founder of Excella Internal Fitness Company and the CEO. And I've been talking a lot about Excella lately because I'm using it in my own practice. So of course we have to talk about the test kits and what they're all about and the folks behind it. So Erica, thank you for coming on and chatting with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So the first thing I asked when I was getting emails from your folks and they're saying, hey, check out this new testing, you know, might be useful in your practice. And I was like, oh, okay. So metabolites in the blood versus metabolites in urine, because I'm used to doing oat tests or organic acid tests. I'm used to doing things of that nature. So I thought, oh, metabolites in the blood, I've never done that before. So tell us a little bit about the difference between blood metabolites versus looking at urine metabolites.
Yeah. So, you know, again, I always like to sort of provide context. So you think about, you know, you ingest nutrients. Let's say you have a taco for lunch and that taco, you know, goes into your stomach where it's broken down. It goes into your intestines where the, you know, the microbiome or part of the microbiome, let's say the bacteria and other little critters that make up the microbiome break down that taco into its building block. So, you know, it takes the meat or the beans and breaks it down into your amino acids, your protein bits. It can break down the shell into, you know, carbohydrate bits. It can take the leaves, the green leafy veggies, and break those down. Those nutrients that have been broken down by the microbiome get absorbed through the intestinal lining and then ultimately are brought into the bloodstream, right? So all of those nutrients are absorbed through the intestinal lining, these little cells that have finger-like projections called microvilli, and they're you know, absorbed into your blood, and then they're used, shuttled off to be used for many different purposes, right? From building your hair and nails to your immune system to other organs to, you know, powering you, giving you energy to do your thing. So typically, you know, again, the nutrients that you consume, you know, go through the system and are absorbed that way and then are utilized by the body. Those nutrients, once they're utilized by the body, are broken down further. And then on their way out, whether they be, you know, let's say urine, you asked specifically about urine, they have to be processed a little bit more, right? They're used up. So their quantity is going to be a little different in the urine than it is in the blood because they've been used by the body. They are modified chemically into different types of structures, which are then basically it's an instruction by the body that, okay, I've used this thing up. I need to now get rid of it. And so, you know, chemical structure gets added to it and it gets put in the pathway for excretion through the kidneys. So what's the difference? Well, the difference, there's going to be a concentration difference. So, you know, there might be a molecule that is going to be at a higher concentration in the blood because it's not going to have been used up yet. If you measure it in the urine, it might have a slightly different structure because of that additional molecule or that chemical structure that gets added. It tells your body it's time to pee it out. And it typically it's in a much lower concentration because it's been used up by the body. So, you know, I think we like urine testing. It's more than some of the other types of testing because it's more similar to blood-based testing. But the structures and the concentrations of the metabolites are often very different.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And obviously when we're doing urine testing, if someone's had too much to drink in terms of water, it can dilute the results. Right. And same can happen a little bit with the blood, but I feel like blood's just a little bit different in terms of its ability to tell us kind of what's going on in this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And most of the testing that's done, you know, even in traditional Western medicine, you go in, you get your vitamin D, your cholesterol, your, you know, these markers tested, they're all done in the blood.
Yeah. And of course, there's been a huge debate as to, you know, what's better, what's this, what's that. And I don't want to get into that today. I'm more interested just because, you know, the organic acids testing I've been using for years, but there's a lot of metabolites. And sometimes you really get lost in the weeds with like, oh my gosh, I have, you know, you look at your results and you're like, I have like 400 metabolites off here. And I'm exaggerating, folks, but there's a bunch of things off. Whereas with Excellus testing, there's 11 metabolites. And it's easier to kind of hone in on, okay, where do I really need to focus versus a lot of extraneous information that may or may not be important. So what brought you guys to choosing the 11 metabolites that you did? How did the process go about? What did you guys do?
Absolutely. So, you know, I was very fortunate to meet our co-founder and chief scientist, a gentleman by the name of Wayne Mattson, who, you know, has been doing this for his entire life, his entire career. So he's probably 40, 50 years in the industry. He's in his late 70s at this point in his life. Throughout the course of his career, he's been an entrepreneur, a research scientist, a professor. He's been hired by pharma to look at clinical trials work. I mean, really, again, when you've been doing this for a long time, it's highly advantageous because you have a lot of data to pull from. And I think that's one of the struggles a lot of new companies in the space have. They just don't have, they haven't had the time to accumulate enough data, but, you know, Wayne has. And so throughout the course of his, time in the industry, he's really considered one of the pioneers in this area of metabolomics. Again, looking at these small molecules in blood and urine and other body fluid too. But we've looked at, let's say, 50,000 samples across a broad cross-section of different health states, from everything from the neurodegenerative diseases, so Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, Huntington's, to different types of heart disease, diabetes, GI issues, anxiety, schizophrenia, depression, autoimmune conditions, cancers. I mean, pick a disease state. We've probably researched it. And typically what we do is we look at healthy versus unhealthy. What is different biochemically between the person who is healthy and the person who is not, person with the disease and the person who, you know, does not have the disease? Or frankly, even like, you know, you take 1,000 people who say they sleep well, and then 1,000 people who are like, man, I just don't sleep well. And you look again, biochemically, what is different between them? And these 11 molecules that we have chosen kept coming up over and over again across all of these different research studies as being significant. So they were risk factors for certain types of conditions. They were disease progression markers and overall markers of, you know, again, health and wellness. And, you know, you say, well, 11, is that enough? And what's really interesting is that these 11 are, you know, precursors to some of the most important other things, right? So meaning that they are the starting material from which the body takes that marker and turns it into other really important chemicals in the body. So tryptophan is a great example. It's a amino acid, which is converted by the microbiome into serotonin, which is really important for mood and sleep and happiness, which is also converted into melatonin, which is important for sleep. Tyrosine, which we measure, is important for, again, your body takes that in and converts it into dopamine, adrenaline. And it's even relevant in thyroid health and that the conversion of some of those thyroid molecules. So again, you know, you say, well, is 11 enough? Well, the good news is there's that they're very important and they're precursors to other very important things. And so, you know, just because you measure more, to your point, doesn't always make it better because you don't always know why am I measuring this and is there anything I can actually do about it? So, you know, again, these markers come from 50 years of research and they're, you know, known as being very, very important physiologically in the body.
That's a great explanation. I appreciate that because I think a lot of people are looking at this and they're familiar with the organic acids testing or things of that nature. And they're like, well, why would I do one thing where I'm only going to get 11 when I can get, you know, there's that concept of, you know, more is a better concept here. It's kind of like the super size me component that we have when it comes to looking at your labs. And so I tell a lot of folks, I'm like, yeah, but like you just said, there's a lot you can get out of these 11. Plus we're not targeting all these different areas. And same point goes with looking at the microbiome. A lot of people are like, well, how can you look at the microbiome in the blood and not looking at the gut bugs in the blood? And I'm like, well, you know, sometimes if we look at every single gut bug, what can we really do with that information? If we know every single bug that's in the body, I'm sure you guys kind of went over that when you were going through your data as well.
Yeah, no, we get asked that question all the time. You know, the challenge, there's a couple of different challenges with, you know, traditionally when you say we're a gut microbiome test, the automatic assumption is it's a stool sample test because that's how conventionally, you know, gut microbiome testing has been done. And that, you know, the challenge, there are numerous challenges, I think, with that. You know, the first is to your point, you know, well, so you've scooped your poop and you know, the results come out and they give you a long list of the different bacteria in your stool. We'll come back to that because what is in your gut and what is in your stool are typically actually not always the same. And what is in your stool isn't always completely representative of what is in the gut, but let's say you have a list of 1,000 things. Well, now what, right? Because, you know, research doesn't necessarily know what every single bacteria, you know, what its purpose is and what does it all mean. So again, to your point, more isn't always better there. Our bigger, I think, concern with the difference between stool sample testing is what the test claims to be able to do. So, you know, again, I always go back, you've eaten your food, you know, your taco, it's in your stomach, it's been broken down in your small intestine, the bacteria have started to break it down. Now, everything that is not digestible, basically everything that your body doesn't need or want or can't digest is moving forward into the colon, water gets pulled out, you know, some dead bacteria and stuff get added in, and that's the stool. So your stool sample, you know, what is in the stool and what is in your gut are not the same. It would be terrible if your entire microbiome came out every time you went to the bathroom. This would be very bad for you and doesn't happen. So again, there's a little bit of a problem there. The real issue I think that I have is, you know, people are making nutrition programs and plans and weight loss initiatives based on your stool. But how can you do that? How can you tell if somebody needs to eat an apple based on their stool? It just doesn't make scientific sense. So, you know, I think that there's, you know, then that's why I think there's a lot of question about, you know, how accurate and good are these stool sample tests? I think if you want to know, do I have bacteria, parasites in my stool? Do I have cholesterol in my stool? Do I have, you know, maybe I just have morbid curiosity with, you know, what's in my stool. Then take the stool sample test. But if you're trying to figure out, are the bacteria in my gut doing what they need to do in order to keep me healthy, to get me the nutrients I need? You go back to my explanation at the beginning. Remember, they broke down that taco. That taco, those nutrients were absorbed through the intestinal lining and went into the blood. So you can tell how well the gut microbiome is working by looking at these nutrients in the blood. Because, you know, that's an assessment of, you know, are my lactobacillus actually breaking down the food that I need in the way that's going to keep me healthy? So again, I think it doesn't necessarily seem logical that way, but that's how the system works. And so it's less important whether you have 8 billion lactobacillus or 7 billion lactobacillus. What's really important is, are they doing their job correctly? Yeah. And the way to measure that is through the blood.
Yeah. Yeah. And I found that myself. So here's a little story time. I did my Excella internal fitness testing and I was shocked. My scores for my gut health were quite low. I was in the 60s and I'm like, wow. Okay. And quite low. Okay. We're still in good range, folks, if you're keeping track here. But I was horrified because I thought, okay, I've done the stool testing. I've done GI mapping. I've done, you know, pretty much every stool test out there. I'm a geek. I'll do them all just to see what happens. And then I change based on what I have read, what I, you know, get information from. And I was horrified that what I've been doing actually didn't work. So this was eye-opening to me to be like, okay, now we have a test that actually tells me my, you know, internal fitness of my gut, what's going on with my energy efficiency. But I think the other big thing here too is going along the lines of what's going on with perimenopause and menopause. And I am 43, starting to see things happen for sure. And I heard you talking about the estrobolum and how we kind of are wrapped up in that too. And a lot of folks that listen to this podcast are in the perimenopause, menopause range. And I think it's important to kind of talk a little bit about estrogens and holy cow, am I maybe even more beneficial looking at the Excella testing versus the stool testing when I'm going through menopause because, you know, gaining weight around the abdomen, all these things are happening.
Absolutely.
So a little bit about why you guys kind of dove into that too, to kind of help us folks out.
Absolutely. And I just turned 40, so I'm in, you know, I'm same boat and experiencing a lot of, you know, strange and unique symptoms that are, you know, not as debilitating, I think, as some, you know, people are experiencing, but I'm on the front end. So, you know, it was really interesting. When we started to dig in, what we discovered was that, you know, so the body of course produces estrogen, your ovaries, different organs do this. And as you age, of course, the production decreases. There's not much you can do about that in terms of stimulating your ovaries to do more. I mean, there's just, it does what it does. But what isn't necessarily commonly known is that estrogen that is secreted actually has to be activated in order to be utilized by the body. And where does that happen? Well, that happens in the gut microbiome. So there are two species of bacteria, the Bacteroides and the Firmicutes, and, you know, they take the estrogen and cleave it into its active form. So if you know, again, so it's a bidirectional relationship. So it's, you know, if your estrogen levels are decreasing, but your gut microbiome is damaged, you're not effectively converting your estrogen and not activating it. So you're not able to, you know, the cleaved estrogen, so the active estrogen, cannot go into the bloodstream. It cannot bind to its receptors. It cannot do its job, which further exacerbates the problem, which, you know, in theory, right, will mean that perimenopause and menopause could come on even earlier, right? So again, and I think most folks didn't know that. In fact, I'm a scientist. I had no idea that was the case. It was really quite fascinating. So if by keeping your gut healthy, by keeping the bacteria healthy, by keeping the intestinal lining healthy, you're giving your body a better chance to be able to effectively cleave and absorb active estrogen. The same applies to phytoestrogens. So, you know, people who say, well, I'm going to eat a lot of soy in my diet to try to help this problem. Well, it doesn't matter. Again, if your gut microbiome is damaged, you cannot cleave phytoestrogens. And even if you're on hormonal therapy, you still can't cleave it to activate it. So if the gut microbiome is damaged, you're just at a total disadvantage. So I think that's sort of takeaway point number one, which is we may not be able to raise your estrogen levels because your physiology, it's just going to happen. There's going to be a decline, but you can keep them higher for longer if your gut microbiome is healthy. And if those bacteria are able to do, you know, their job. And then, you know, you can get into the weeds with the, you know, as estrogen declines, the effects on circadian rhythm, which affects the way, you know, fat deposits are happening, energy, decreasing estrogen affects serotonin levels, which affect mood, sleep. Hot flashes are tied to thermal regulation, which is a serotonin problem. Serotonin is extremely interesting. If you look, there's a really cool pathway, which shows when estrogen levels are high and are good, the whole pathway actually encourages tryptophan to convert to serotonin and to stop there. When estrogen levels are low, the whole thing shuts down basically, and estrogen at the very bottom, and the serotonin doesn't stop at serotonin. It keeps being converted into other things. So again, it's this interesting bidirectional relationship, but there's some things that you can solve and there's some things that you can't solve as readily. And so I would say focusing on healing the gut microbiome may actually help you to maintain higher levels of estrogen, you know, assuming you don't want to go and do medications and all this, but even then, which could, you know, can help in the larger, you know, picture. And that's why you want to keep that, you know, take the test and keep your gut health as healthy as you can.
Well, I found it very, very interesting that you had said that about the bioidentical hormones in the gut. Cause when I was listening to your webinar and I thought, oh, okay. Cause the light went on for me because I thought, okay, I do use bioidentical hormones in my practice. I use them myself. And I do find that sometimes folks do not, you know, we seem like, oh, we're just not using these hormones. Well, what's going on with the body? Why do we need to, you know, keep upping this dosage? And I'm like, I don't want to keep giving you more. Well, here we are. The gut microbiome is the component, that missing link here as to utilization.
Otherwise you're just peeing them out.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're too expensive to be messing around. Like, for sure. For sure. So another hot topic, of course, this day and age is immunity. And with the testing, we can look at immunity and obviously gut health. I think I've heard 70% of your immune system is in your gut anyway. So one of the things that folks were asking me, and of course, I have a podcast Facebook group that I pull for questions. And in this case, I've heard a couple questions about how's the real connection with the gut immunity and the microbiome? What's the key components there? And what do you test in the test kit that you have for the gut immunity?
Absolutely. So again, you know, you hear people talk about, oh, you know, 70% of your immune system's in your gut. And you're like, how does that actually work? So I'm going to just explain quickly. Yeah. So like I said, you know, if you imagine, and there's no visual here, but if you imagine your intestine, right, there's a tube and you've got these cells that are, they almost look like little fingers reaching down into the intestine. And the whole point of having this is to increase the amount of surface area that you have to absorb nutrients in the intestine. So rather than the lining being just flat, they have these kind of like mountainous projections, again, with the goal of trying to maximize the absorption that you have. The cells that make up your intestinal, it's called the intestinal epithelium, but the cell wall there are only one cell thick. So it's really easy to damage them because there's only one cell, right? The cells are held together with structures that are called tight junctions. So you imagine that these cells are packed next to each other pretty tightly. And there's a little structure in between the cell called a tight junction that prevents stuff from leaking through between those cells. So you're, and then at the top, where the finger-like projections are, there's like a layer of mucus that protects your intestinal lining from damage. And that's where the gut microbiome lives. The gut microbiome lives in the mucus because it's kind of sticky, right? So it gets held there in place, all the little bacteria. You eat your taco, the taco comes through, the gut microbiome digests it, breaks it down. And then those nutrients are absorbed through those finger-like projections into the blood vessels, and then they're shuttled off. What can happen if your intestinal lining is damaged? And this can happen from a variety of different things, whether it's stress, whether it's, you know, different types of foods, unfortunately, that damage it. Antibiotics can damage it. All kinds of things, unfortunately, can damage the lining. The tight junctions between the cells actually start to separate. And so now the food that your microbiome is gleefully breaking down no longer is absorbed through the finger-like projections. It's now passing through between the cells into an area, you know, it's just like an area, right? Called the lamina propria. That's actually where 70% of your immune system lies in wait to be told what to do if you have an infection. Now, your immune system doesn't know the difference between a taco or tomato or beef or whatever and a pathogen or anything bad, right? It's like, oh, I don't know what that is. That does not belong here. And so it starts to attack it. That's why, you know, for the foods, typically we end up with food sensitivities to things we eat a lot of. Why? Because the constant reinforcement of, you know, I have my egg over and over and over again every day. I have that leaky gut, quote unquote, right? Where the food is leaking between the cells into the lamina propria, immune system keeps attacking it. Over time, you've now sensitized your immune system to thinking that egg is bad. And so every time it sees an egg or a taco, it's going to go and attack that, thinking it's an invader. So that's why it's really important to keep your intestinal lining as solid as possible. So in the test, we can look at intestinal permeability. So for example, serotonin, super important marker that looks at how permeable is my intestine? We have three different indoles that we look at the health and diversity of the gut. Do we have a dysbiosis? Do we have the good or bad? Do we have enough of the protective versus invasive bacteria? Because again, invasive bacteria can do bad things and potentially create leaky gut type situations. Inflammation markers are really important, right? Because if your body is showing that it's inflamed, it could potentially be because your immune system is a bit out of control, doing the wrong thing. So, we have three different indoles. We have serotonin. We've got compounds like uric acid, xanthine, that are inflammation markers that we can say, all right, you build the whole story as you look at all 11 markers, suddenly the story starts to really paint a very interesting picture.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and it definitely gives you direction. Whereas, not to beat a dead horse, folks, but really it gives you a good direction compared to these singular tests, like just doing the stool test, just doing an O test. We've got now a whole life component here. And in particular, one of the things that really drew me to your testing, and then of course your programs, is that now we have custom supplements that come, as recommended for what's going on. And then there's the fitness component. And I've been also asked quite a bit, how does exercise improve your gut?
Yeah, no, that's scientifically the loosest, right, connection in a way, because I can't tell you that by doing sit-ups, you're going to, a certain bacteria is going to benefit, right? I don't know that. Science doesn't know that. To my knowledge, someone out there is going to be like, I read about it in the paper. But what we do know is that one, gut motility is improved when you exercise, which is really important. A lot of people are just chronically constipated, and having good bowel movements is important. So exercise moves things along. That's super, super important. You don't want things festering in there. You don't want stuff rotting in there. It's gross. So exercise, super important. Exercise also really important for your mental health. Right? You secrete lots of happiness hormones when you exercise. This is a good thing. And then depending on the type of exercise, if you're a woman, perimenopausal, menopausal, super important to do strength training, because that is going to help with your, calcium issues, making sure that your bones stay strong, that you stay strong. It's going to help with estrogen, help maintaining higher levels of estrogen. So again, it all is connected. It's all tied in. And if your estrogen is decreasing, your microbiome is suffering, right? They're all interconnected. So it's not necessarily as simple as do X and Y. X might affect Z, which affects Y, and it's interconnected. So, exercise is key, and it could be restorative exercise. It doesn't have to be go and run 50 miles. It could just be go, out and take a nice walk, because it turns out you're really stressed out, and what you really need is just to breathe some air quietly, move your body, but you don't need to go and, run 10 miles in order to, to get that advantage. But everybody is different. So again, this is why you test. This is why, folks work with you, Dr. Krause, because you're able to take all the pieces together, and then you know the person and say, all right, look, this is the story that is being told from your data and from what you're talking to me about, and to put it together into a comprehensive plan that really helps them to attack their problem. Right? It's because we're not all the same.
Right. And I think that's the most important thing that to take away here is that, yeah, we are all individual. We have individual results. And my other girlfriend who I was like, hey, you got to check Excel out. She just got her test back and her stuff looks so amazing. She's got excellent going on and I'm over here in good. And so now we have a competition going on. But it's also something to, you know, for all of you guys listening, it's a custom plan here and customization is key. This one size fits all business, you know, with what's going on in some of the more popular companies out there with the stool testing and things, that's not customized to you. That is an algorithm that's spit out.
And, Correct. And, you know, I think, you know, what is their, I think the question always is, you know, what is the end goal, right? Are they trying to sell you a product? Are they like what, you know, and often tests are used to push something, right? So maybe they sell a probiotic, maybe they sell something else. And the purpose of the test is really to push something else. And, you know, again, we've tried, it's hard, but we've tried to make sure that everything we do is entirely transparent. You know, people will take their test, they have their information, they can go and make informed decisions. They can buy whatever products they need, you know, from whomever they want, and to feel like they've learned something, you know, constructive. And that's sort of our commitment to our customers.
That's awesome. That's awesome. No, it's definitely been a great experience so far. And your customer service from a couple of my folks have said is wonderful as well. So I'm enjoying hearing all of the good feedback. So Erica, I know that you do a lot of different things in addition to just working on the internal Excella internal fitness program, and you've got other things going on, but where can folks find you and connect with you as well? Cause you've got your amazing TED talk, but you also have a children's show. I see something of that nature. Is that still going on?
So it's not currently, no, there's no new filming. My world is complicated these days. So we had to focus on things. One of my hobbies is STEM for children. So science, technology, engineering, and math. So I run a nonprofit to get kids interested in STEM. And it's just been a passion project for many, many years. Thankfully now it sort of has a life of its own and a leadership team. And I'm still involved, but the day-to-day operations are really manned by a lovely group of wonderful individuals called Science from Scientists. But again, if folks are interested, there is, I'm easy to find. I'm just Erica with a K at excella.com or Erica at scienceformscientists.org. You know, I'm passionate about healthcare. I'm passionate about education, trying to help the world just be slightly better place with everything that we're facing today. I think that's, I don't know. I think that's, we should all be trying in some way.
Yeah. No, it's great. I mean, the medical system is broken. We all need a little bit of help on our own to navigate this health thing in which it is. And then definitely the perimenopause, menopause. So thank you so much for taking the time to come on today with me. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you so much.
Hey, Health Junkie, do you want to take the conversation to the next level based off of the Health Fix podcast? Well, you're in luck. Head over to the Facebook group for this podcast called Find Your Health Fix. There you'll find me answering questions, but also dropping in all kinds of tidbits and keeping the conversation going all about health. And you'll never know what you might learn and what might open up a door to a new you.